Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Can rats and mice procreate?
Now we're fucking talking. So a mule is the product of a donkey and a horse, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, a donkey that is absolutely punching.
They, yeah, how fucking well is that donkey doing?
Hello and welcome to the Worst Idea of All Time Emergency Season. It's time to start your rockin' day with Tim the Dingo and Guy the Mustachio Captain of the Airwaves. Guy, can you hear me?
Absolutely, Tim. I genuinely don't have the energy to engage in your morning radio horseplay, but fuck, I love the offer, and I'm really sorry I couldn't meet you halfway.
Sometimes it's a funny old thing because you go into the record so tired, you don't think you've got any gas in the tank, but that just puts you in the silliest mood of all, and all of a sudden, you open your mouth and this comes out.
I'm excited to be in your company, Dingo. Tell me, what have you been doing to occupy the last hour and 45 minutes of your life?
I drank 3 beers, and that was enough to make me so fucking sleepy while I was watching this movie that my eyes were like, Acme weights from an old Roadrunner cartoon.
It was, I can really see the visual. Yeah, I found this to be a very dispassionate screening of Home Alone 3. Our sixth watch, I hasten to add.
Thing is, though, here's what sucks about this season. Usually it's like, we're 5% done. We're 12 watchings out of 52. Who knows when this ends, you know?
Oh,
this
man.
Was the original concept as well. When we first opened our big dumb mouths in 2014 in February, and we were like, hey, let's do a podcast and we'll watch Grown Ups 2 until we can't. That was the OG premise.
Imagine if we were still doing that.
Fuck, man. I don't think... Yeah, imagine. I don't think I could handle it. I don't.
We would have seen it over... Hold on. Years times 50 is... We would have seen it
300.
Like over 300 times.
Yeah.
We've not managed that, but we have certainly put our minds to various different menial consumption tasks. Mm. And... Yeah, there's something about the landscape in which we're watching this, which there are a lot of familiar feelings being stirred up during this screening. Sort of just that angst, that sort of just dreary, gnawing kind of frustration at myself for subjecting us to this. And it all just felt too familiar. And then the broader picture, obviously, is that this is not familiar terrain at all. I have... what I can only describe as a deep yearning to be tucked in by my mum.
Oh, shit. And then, that sounds very dangerous. That's not a good place to be emotionally.
Woken up the next morning at a reasonable hour to be told to go and walk the dogs.
Mm-hmm. What is walking the dogs? Is that a metaphor or genuinely you just want to get out
there? Yeah, it's a metaphor for taking the two Jack Russell dogs we have for a walk.
I see.
So it's
not
a pretty
poetic woman with Charlotte.
It's a pretty literal metaphor.
She's still here.
Charlotte fucking rocks, dude. I tell you what else rocks. The fact that this is undoubtedly one of the 1990s foremost feminist texts. Did you know this is the first Home Alone film to feature a female burglar? Alice Ribbons?
Fucking hills to die on. Your internet's cutting in and out, which is almost as frustrating as this thesis you perpetually push onto me that this Home Alone 3 is a feminist text. I don't know what's more annoying. And you know I fucking hate a dicey connection. You know that. You know that about me.
I actually think my connection's strong, although the warning screen on my computer that just told me my internet connection is unstable begs to differ. I'm going to overwrite that with the knowledge that my internet connection is stable, my relationship to you is stable, and my takes on cinema are amongst some of the most stable in recorded history.
You are being given direct advice from both me and your computer that something is the reality of the situation, and you're throwing it out the window. You clearly don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
How many other movies in 1997 showed the mum doing the cleaning up and having fun stuff in the attic while the dad cooks dinner with four pots on the go, Tim, and we see him empty one of them? It's a big pot. This is a family of five. Three of them are children. It's all together too much food. All the pots are boiling simultaneously.
It wasn't the fucking 50s, dude. It was the 90s. We were only 2 years out from The Matrix coming out, you know?
The Matrix, of course, is one of the foremost feminist texts in the history of cinema.
Correct.
It's not a hill I'll bother to die on, but it's a hill I'm building brick by brick.
I tell you what, I think you are going to die on this hill. I think you've been dying every episode you bring it up.
Oh,
you're dead to me, guy.
Why don't you put a sock in it, Tim? And by
because then we don't have a good podcast going. You know?
I mean,
then you just got Captain Guy, but you're missing the dingo. Everyone loves the dingo.
I hate the dingo. I sent you a screen grab not long before this call when you were bothering me to set up a link on which we could communicate.
Confused by that. I thought you drew it.
No, I did not draw that. We are to believe that was drawn by one Alex Pruitt as he taped it to the fridge. I want to talk
to you. I don't want to talk about the movie. I just watched it. Tell me about something else. Tell me
a
fact.
I want to talk to you about why anyone would have to put a hand-drawn sign telling them to keep the pet mouse out of the fridge. Surely, this is the sort of information that is widely understood amongst the family. We don't want the mouse in the fridge. Why would you have to go to the trouble of specifically explaining that? And Tim, this isn't an ordinary mouse. Doris is totally in cahoots with Alex, to the point that their relationship transcends the normal relationship between owner and pet. They are in cahoots. They are allies. They are teammates. They are the dingo and the captain. They are up to their fucking eyeballs in conspiracy theories, and they are building towards something that I think becomes realized in the 2000 and, can't remember when text, Sex and the City 2. Home Alone 3 walked so Brady could run.
I really thought you were going to throw Stuart Little out there.
Stuart Little is, in my opinion, one of the foremost feminist texts of the movies from that sort of late 90s, early 2000s bracket.
Okay, so the thing you're reading into the relationship between Doris and Alex is the feminist overtones of that in the film. It's not the mouse bit of it.
No, no.
It's the fact that Doris is a woman.
It's the mouse. It's the mouse thing. It's the mouse thing. The feminist thing is a sidebar. The mouse thing's what I'm talking about. I want you to imagine a world in which Brady, or Brady Hobbs Brady, or Brady Brady Hobbs, or Brady Magda Hobbs Brady,
yeah,
is sitting at home being neglected by his parents in a way that is not altogether too dissimilar from the way that Alex Pruitt is consistently neglected by his parents in his moment of need while he's under siege by terrorists and sick with the chicken pox, and seeing a little of himself in the young whippersnapper. I want you to imagine a world where Brady says, hey, this kid Alex, he's left to his own devices a lot of the time. He's got a close relationship with an elderly woman who's in constant proximity to him, Magda, Mrs. Hess. He's harnessing the power of a mouse or a rat to do his bidding, to help him in realizing his goals.
Do you know how fucking wild shit would get if Brady and Alex teamed up? Because, there's a couple of ways that Alex could go. And I guess one is sort of a Jimmy Neutron, boy genius, you know, lovable adventures type of thing. But to be honest, he, in this film, seems to be showing early signs of channeling his skills into just fucking bloodlust and really injuring people. He's the Unabomber in training. And if he had that level of skill and disdain for adults at such a young age,
and he teamed up with Brady, who's got such ambitious goals. I mean, they're unstoppable, but it's also very dark, isn't it?
Well, if you think about it, by the time that Brady's on the scene, you know, harnessing the power of a million rats, Alex has grown up, probably grown up and grown out of this phase to be, I'm imagining someone who works in startups. He's in tech, he's in Silicon Valley.
Sounds like Dickbot to me.
He's probably quite restless. He's probably bounced around from company to company. You know, he's taken his fair share of stock that's turned out to be quicksand beneath his feet. It's worthless.
He spent five years
at Theranos before he got muscled out.
Here's what's happened to him, I reckon.
Yeah, go ahead.
He's one of those incredibly gifted young programmers who gets brought into a startup and then, like, invents some algorithm that saves the company a tremendous amount of money or unlocks this huge potential. And then they kind of just take his toolkit and then give him a severance package, and he gets out of there. But it's his fucking special sauce that made the whole thing turn into a $1 billion empire.
That's a disgruntled employee. He looks down at his feet in the parking lot while he's on his way to his Toyota Prius, and what does he find? But a newspaper, the San Francisco Chronicle, blows across his Adidas Stan Smith on his right foot. He picks it up, and there's a little story on the sixth page in the bottom right corner about a young boy in New York City who's harnessing the power of rats.
I want this to be a musical. What do you think of that?
Sort of in the, do you know, you so often you want these things to be musicals.
I quite like musicals. What can I say?
This sounds
quite fantastical, which I think would translate well to musical theatre.
He reads the article. He looks up Brady. He says, "Hey, kid, I don't know if you want to hear what I've got to say, but I pretty much wrote the book on rats." And Brady says, "Alex D. Linz, who played Alex Pruitt in Home Alone 3, I fucking pretty much was brought up on that film. Let the professional chemistry begin."
It's a terrifying thought. But there's a pretty good chance as well that Alex, owed to his love of technology, will actually go and join Dickbot instead of Brady, you know?
Or he could see two powerful figures, you know, warring for the universe and identify pretty quickly strengths and weaknesses in their respective battle approaches as someone who is familiar with both rats and technology. And perhaps work towards unifying, saying the three of us could consolidate our powers and rule together. He could pick a side, or he could say, "I can rise above all of this with the power of rats and technology. I would be virtually unstoppable." Here's an equation that no one else has bothered to look at.
Is Doris a mouse or a rat?
It's unknown. I think Doris is represented as a mouse. It's referred to as a mouse. So it might be a mouse, but...
You can tell... I mean, like, that's on us. Most people would be able to look at a creature and go, that's a mouse, that's a rat, you know?
I think it's a mouse.
We're dummies, guy.
Can rats and mice procreate?
Now we're fucking talking. So a mule is the product of a donkey and a horse, I'm pretty sure.
A donkey that is absolutely punching.
Yeah, how fucking well is that donkey doing to get a horse?
Can you imagine that donkey showing back up in the yard and being like, "You'll never guess what I just fucked."
Donkeys are historically the symbol of, like, the worst bit of work and being stupid and shitting everywhere. Horses are beloved. You put princes on a horse. You give horses as the ultimate birthday gift for the richest girl in the world. But a fucking donkey is beating one of those? My God.
Worse yet, imagine the horse who found out that their horse wife cheated on them with a donkey at the birth of their child. The whole time during the pregnancy, they're just fired up. Fuck, I can't wait for my spawn. I can't wait for this young stallion. I'm so excited at the prospect of raising this child together. And the mama horse is just like, "Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's
yours." Hey, guy, what a mare. That's the dingo for you.
Yeah, that is the dingo. And then you would see this mule come out of the vagina and be like, "What in fuck's name is that?"
A mouse and a rat, I reckon, are way closer together than a donkey and a horse. Both on the social ladder, but also genetically, I think. So I reckon there'd be a greater chance of offspring. I wonder if this gets factored in, the fact that both mice and rats procreate tons, like they have no trouble fucking and siring, you know, lots and lots of their young.
I just think if, so. Actually, you finish, and then I'll. I was just going to say, I think if rats and mice figured out to crossbreed, that could potentially accelerate the rate at which they are creating themselves.
Do you think?
And also just create a stronger union between the two subspecies. And I just think it's a more efficient path to victory.
It is interesting to think about how close a thing can be to fuck another thing and successfully sire.
Humans and chimps. That's not on the cards, is it?
I don't think so, right? Like, I feel like we'd know about that if that was a thing.
Yeah.
And chimps are the closest to us. Bonobos apparently are pretty close.
Yeah, and they've got fantastic deals on clothes.
We're not sponsored.
Don't he's shaking his head at me.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you feel like we're in the trenches? It's pretty early to be down here, but I feel like
Here. Possibly be in the trenches at watch number 6. I think it's just a night watch is probably a silly idea. But then doing it in the morning sucks as well. I guess our podcast format is just fucking bad.
It's broken. I'm in a bit of a malaise, man. I'm in a malaise.
Yeah. Just generally speaking.
Yeah, man.
That's understandable.
What
do you want to do? What are you craving? Yeah, what are you craving right now, man? If you could fucking wave a wand, do you want to go to the pub or what? Like, what's your number one?
It is literally to be tucked into bed by my mum. Beyond that, I think the underlying thing is just physical contact with my nearest and dearest. I think it's walking into a room and seeing someone I love and respect physically in the same room as me and giving them a hug and saying, fuck yes. And it's just like it's the open ended, and we're lucky, but it's the open ended nature of what lies ahead. I just like I've just felt this overwhelming need to for some semblance of normalcy to return.
You're an affectionate guy. This is why it's good that you've sort of got a young ward now, because I feel like that's a fantastic combination for someone who loves giving cuddles. As kids love cuddles,
but
cuddles are so good for them.
Yeah, but you know, it's one of those situations where if you want the cuddle, you're not going to get the cuddle. Kids are like dogs. They can smell fear and they can smell need, and you know, you really got to.
Not my dog, man. God, he's pathetic. He's so cute, but like as soon as I will walk anywhere in proximity, he'll just flip onto his back waiting for a belly rub.
Legend. That's the dog you raised, by the way.
That is the dog my wife raised, Guy, and you know that.
That is the dog.
I didn't fucking raise him like that.
You need to look at this as something that you worked on together. You and Zoe did not raise two separate dogs.
No, that's true. But I think if we get another dog, I get to raise that one a bit more. I think we've got to even this out.
You're going to raise a little rough and tumble. Can I ask you a question? Where the fuck does Stan's self-confidence come from? This guy dropped some of the worst jokes I've heard in the history of cinema with the confidence of Rodney Dangerfield in his prime.
Rodney Dangerfield was supremely confident, but he did earn it. And Stan is a hopeless dickwad. The thing is, though, he's also the eldest, and they can go one of two ways. They can either be very sort of unsure because they're the first to kind of go forward, or very cocksure where, you know, they kind of, no one's written the rule book for them yet.
Yeah. The first joke he does, which tells me beyond the sort of exposition that we're given of his character, who is just this detestable little fuck, is he says, when they find out that Alex has got chicken pox, and Scarlett Johansson's just as guilty, but her face isn't quite as detestable. He says, this is great. Because, you know, the parents are tending to Alex, and Scarlett Johansson says, does that happen to include his buttock region? And then Stan says, this is great. If he scratches his chicken spots, we can call him
Scarbutt.
That kills me. I honestly think if my son said a joke like that, I would hammer him for lacking basic, just like respect for humor. And I think maybe it passes muster in terms of joke structure. But what are you getting at there? Like
Scarface? Was that the reference?
I mean, the fact that we have to ask tells me it's quite simply not good enough. And then so, maybe you give him a pass there. Maybe you're like, he was just trying to make a joke and he scrambled and he panicked. He didn't quite stick the landing. But then later on, when he says, Alex, they're at dinner, and he says, Alex, could you please pass me, this is after Alex has called the police twice and they've said that there was no one there. He says, Alex, could you please pass me the false alarms? Excuse me. I'm sorry. I meant the peas. This one kills me because peas and false alarms don't sound anything alike. False alarms, in turn, does not sound like anything that you would have on a dinner table. Like, it doesn't...
You fucking got him there, Monty. That's such a good point. They don't sound the same at all. You're really sticking it to Stan. The one that confuses me that he says, it's not a joke, it's just how fucking stupid he is. Or it's kind of, I don't know, it's not, it's sort of how stupid he is. It's when he goes, he's just mad. Oh, he's just lying to get out of his science test tomorrow because someone killed his bug. And at that point, Alex doesn't know that his bug has died. No one knows that his bug has died except for
Stan.
Except for Cut Price Buzz, aka Stan, who killed the bug. And it's just such a weird like way to reveal it, because it's like he's preemptively trying to defend himself, but he's sort of outed himself as the murderer. But he's also throwing it at Alex like it's some sort of slam, which it isn't. It's weird.
Yeah, he's all over the map. And I don't think he's getting the attention he needs at home. So often, the issues with these guys is not within them. It's within the environment. And
who's older, Stan or Molly?
Stan.
Yeah.
He's the oldest. And honestly, like it's one of those classic sibling dynamics where him and Molly have a kinship purely because they're closer in age and Alex is markedly younger than both of them. But you can totally see Molly's going to outgrow Stan, and her and Alex might form a bond, or they might not. But I don't like what's in the future for Stan at all.
How awkward will the senior year be for Stan when he... And, like, look, people look different, and that's fine. Stan's got quite a strong look. He's got a very strong look. Scarlett Johansson's starting to come into her own. She's probably like 16 or something, you know. The girl is turning into a young woman, and Stan has to fucking deal with all his friends with Scarlett Johansson. That's hard.
Fuck yeah. That would absolutely kill him. Also, like, when you're on the slide and your siblings are on the rise, it'll break your heart. He just rubs me up the wrong way, man. And I probably shouldn't be taking it out on him, but he was
there. I do object to you taking it out on his face, Guy. I will say that. I think that's uncalled for, especially for children.
His face is framed by his hair and his His hair is one of the things I have a huge problem with. His taste in music, his entitled nature, his sense of humor, the way he sort of oscillates between being a young thug and like an upstanding. So when he's trying to intimidate the FBI agent, who, by the way, is woefully out of his depth. Holy shit. Can we take a moment to talk about how fucked the FBI are in this? This guy, Detective Stuckey, or whatever his name is, these are high-end crooks. He's been trailing Mr. Beaupre for 7 years. The head of investigation is only now. He's been tracing these criminals for 7 years. Only now is he introducing his team of 13 other investigators to who exactly they're looking for and what the scale and stakes of the situation is.
Hold on. I think that Mr. Beaupre has been on the radar for a long time, but I think this is a new grift. I think this is a new bunch of bandits. This is a new group, right? Because the reason why we know that he's been looking for 7 years for him is right at the end when Alex is going, there's an old woman who is needs medical attention for
very
a cold
old
feet
and very
some
cold.
Soup. That's right. It's a good line. There's a guy locked up in the closet. There's a woman in the attic. There's a guy frozen
in
the
pool. No, there's two guys frozen in the pool. There's a woman in the basement, and there's another guy who we don't know where he is.
Who got away, and did you get his name? Stuckey.
Yeah.
Pulls out a photo of Mr. Beaupre, and he says, is that him? He goes, we've been looking for this guy for 7 years. As if they've found him. That's the other thing that gets me. It's said in a way of like on a cop show, when you go, we've been trying to track down this guy for 7 years. It's like, yeah, you still don't fucking have him.
It's
like,
sort of...
now we're in year eight, my dude. He got away.
It's from this iconic era of, like, you know, saying you're in the FBI and wearing a camel long coat over a suit is enough to suggest, like, competence or, you know, someone who's in control
Authority,
or in charge. But he's up against it, man. 13 detectives. He's literally explaining to them what they're looking for. I mean, why has he not introduced these people to what they're looking for before? Or, alternatively, why does he have to keep explaining to the same army of 13 detectives what exactly the stakes are here? This is the FBI. This is meant to be the top agency. And then later on, when he's like, you know, he's realized he's at the school and he realizes he's got the wrong kid. He's got to go to the Pruitt's house. And Stan steps up to him and says, she asked you a question, sir. And then he's like, I got to go. And Scarlett Johansson goes, the idiot you're referring to is my little brother. And then he's like, all right, I'm going to flex on these kids. I've just been intimidated by Stan. Fucking loser. And he says, and I think the actor really relishes in this line. I love it so much. He's like, all right, I'm going to flex on these kids. I'm going to tell them a thing or two about top-end espionage. And he delivers with all the sort of suave, debonair cool of a FBI detective. He says, we think he intercepted a top-secret electronic device stolen from a Defense Department contractor by a group of international criminals working for a North Korean terrorist organization. And that's like him being like, yeah, your brother's done a job I've been unable to do for 7 years.
I also get a strong feeling that if those are the stakes, you probably shouldn't be telling children that that's going
100%.
On.
100%. Because you got stepped to? By Stan, hey, you're going to start blabbing about all of these, you know.
Let me tell you something. Let me lay something on you. I, for a brief time in my life, worked in the public sector. And I'll tell you one thing. It's really hard for people to get fired when you work for the government and government departments. Here's what I think has happened. I think that Stuckey's dad was very good at his job and was a career FBI agent who rose up the ranks and got his son enlisted early. I think that Stuckey has been hanging around like a bad smell, bringing every operation down that he's been a part of, and his superiors have put him on wild goose chases and on the most like stupid waste of time operations.
Yeah,
right?
Keep him occupied and get him out of the office.
But now he's kind of getting wise to it and he's been making a lot of noises. And maybe his dad still has a bit of clout at the country club with still serving management at the FBI. So what they've done is they go, fuck, we got to sort Stuckey out. I know what we'll do. We'll give him this guy who may or may not even fucking exist. Who knows? The guy's a ghost. He probably isn't even real.
all we've got is this photo of him. And we're going to give him the special unit. And what this special unit is it's 13 agents in the FBI who were also mistakenly hired, who all suffer from amnesia. And so Stucky is in this Groundhog Day situation of starting every day by having to outline who they're looking for.
I love it. It's 51st Dates. It's Groundhog Day. It's Home Alone 3. It's Detective Stucky, Attorney at Law.
I reckon that's what's happening here, man. He's been stuck with... it's called Stucky's Dozen.
Oh,
stuck with Stucky. And the theme song, when it kicks off, it's got like... We've got the intro sequence of Stucky putting his shoes on and... fixing his shirt collar and making him look all good, but he's like spilling coffee on his shirt because he's completely incompetent.
It's
and
so
he backs over his letterbox while Wheeler's, what is that, Wheeler's Deal? Is that what the
Steelers
band is?
Steelers Wheel.
Steelers, thank you. Wheeler's Deal. Fucking hell. Stuck in the middle with you. It's a good song.
That is a great song. I like it so much. And then the opening scene is always him walking into the office and he goes... Yeah. Good morning, Sergeant. And he goes, how do you know my name? And then he has to go into an office and set up the episode. So he sets it up in the same way every time where he's like explaining, you know, whatever. It's a different crook every time, but he's got to introduce himself to everyone, introduce everyone to everyone else. Fuck, it's a good premise. I mean, and he's definitely trapped inside of it, inside of this movie franchise, which is upsetting because Stuck with Stucky is in and of itself a better project than Home Alone is by the time that we're dealing with Home Alone 3.
Did you have a shining light?
I think I said it. I worked it into conversation before, which was it's when Alex Pruitt is talking to...
Yeah, thanks. I did think you were talking about the other Alex in Home Alone 3. I appreciate you clearing that up.
You know what, Tim? You and I are working together, okay? You and I are together.
I'm just tired. I'm just tired, man. Come on now. I'm
sorry. Yeah, and do you know who else is tired?
Who? Alex?
Presumably. Stucky's sure as hell tired.
He's so tired. Every day.
But it's also me. And I just needed that extra half a second to get my brain in a place where I could remember the line I was trying to tell you for my shining light. My shining light now, to be honest, is working through these problems with you. But my shining light was... when Alex discovers Mrs. Hess and Mr. Beaupre's there and he reveals himself, and Alex, he's so cool, he's so calm, he's totally unfazed by the fact that all of these crooks have guns, that he's probably just killed three people in cold blood. He shows a flash of empathy for Mrs. Hess, which I think is more lust than anything else. I reckon this guy's got lust in his eyes. And he says, can we please take her inside? She's very old and she's very cold. And it's the line, it's the way it's written, it's the way it's delivered. It's satisfying. It gets me every time. And that was my shining light.
Nice. It is a satisfyingly delivered line.
He's got a great voice.
Yeah.
He's got a good, cute kid voice.
What was the line that you brought up that Alex's mum says? That's really beautiful. Oh, I hope she felt very foolish.
Foolish, yeah.
Foolish.
The way she says foolish is so nice.
It's the O's. There's something about the vowels. And
there's a few really nice lines in there. Like some really good reads, really good offers. There's foolish, there's old and cold, there's what a brave young fellow. Like,
oh, well, this leads me on to my shining light because it's in this sort of arena. It's when Burton Jernigan, no.
Unger?
Who is it? Yeah, it is. It's Burton Jernigan gets in the attic window. Fuck, man. It's so good that I wish ringtones still existed so I could isolate this and make it my ringtone. He steps in after everyone's been fucking electrocuted and their pants have been blown out and they've been smashed in the face with flour, and he gets in that top window and victoriously announces, now things are looking up, and then falls through the floor. And the way he says it is so fucking good.
That's great. I love that, man. Why did ringtones go out of fashion?
Now, I was thinking about this, and I don't have a good answer, because it seems like it happened...
Well, it's like sudden and not sudden at the same time, right? Because they were so ubiquitous when we were growing up. I distinctly remember them being a big part of my teenage years, figuring out how to like convert file types that would fit onto certain phones and transferring shit over and you know, getting some fucking goofy Sonic the Hedgehog sound to be my ringtone when a text message came in. And then all of a sudden, if anyone has their phone on and it makes a noise nowadays, you're accused of being 300 years old and completely out of touch. And rightly so. Like, I would absolutely give anyone balls who had their phone not on silent.
Is that what it is? It's public shaming. So yeah, the technology's better than it ever has been. And it used to be fun. It could be a little identifier for you. I understand. Yeah. I mean, like, I get. Yeah, the heyday was when phones went polyphonic, and you could have more than one tone on the ringtone, and you'd hear these really weird sort of like
Mouse T, I'm horny, being played through a Casio calculator. Fuck yeah, dude!
Bow bow bow. Tim, I reckon that's fucking heaps of chat about this, eh?
You're running out of steam, my man.
Let's.
Let's lob it on the head. I just got very scared of myself opening up more episode. I don't want any part of that.
Yeah.
I want out.
I love the name Burton Jernigan still.
I know you do. Hey, Mr. Unger's first name, Earl. Also incredibly funny.
Earl Unger. Alice Ribbons, Burton Jernigan, and someone I'm actually cracking a smile as I list off these names. That is one thing that they absolutely smashed in the writers' rooms. I would love to get my hands on a handful of episodes of Stuck with Stucky. I'm sure that they wrote those out as well. Something to look forward to, perhaps.
Maybe we could brainstorm a few episodes. I think that'd be a neat little project, actually. Let's get stuck into Stuck with Stucky.
Absolutely. Something to look forward to, everyone. I hope you're all staying sane, looking after each other.
Do a better job of being a friend to the people around you than I am doing with Guy. Be better. Hashtag be better.
Hashtag I will be better. I'll talk to you later, man.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Bye, Guy.
Bye, Tim. America has a massive bread problem. It is incredibly hard to track down high-quality bread in that country.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.